One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow. Roll with the punches.
You gotta roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio, coming at you once again from the bunker, undisclosed location. This is show number 255, and this show will be broadcast on my birthday, my 75th birthday. Can you believe it? Okay, we're brought to you by Madden Funds, Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, where other 8 people go, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness is good for you. What a show we got tonight. We have a special guest, an honorary Irishman, Nick Mavroganis.
You said it right pre-show, too. I was so impressed.
Okay. Nick Mavroganis from the Mount Prospect Police Department. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Morrow's Park.
All right.
We moved to Elk Grove later on.
Okay, a 13-year veteran of law enforcement, holds a master's degree in public administration from UIC. I went there.
Oh, yeah?
He'll have some stories about being a dispatcher in Stone Park and Schiller Park. He was a detective for 4 years, specializing in financial crimes. And in addition to Mount Prospect Police Department, he was also assigned as an inspector with the Illinois State Police Ruse Burglary Task Force. We'll get into that. We're so glad to have you on the show.
Appreciate the opportunity.
You're now an honorary Irishman. God bless you.
I did the 23andMe. I think I had like a 1/10 of 1%.
Well, that's good enough
for
me.
How about that?
Yeah. If you're a little bit of Irish, you're Irish enough. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So right now you're in Mount Prospect. Are you a detective there?
I'm a sergeant there. I was a detective there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So are you is that a detective sergeant?
No, patrol sergeant. Nothing fancy. Just out there working the lines.
Yeah. And how long you been doing that?
Coming up on 3 years as a sergeant. Been with Mount Prospect for 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's the population of Mount Prospect?
About 60,000.
Oh, that's big.
It's decent. It's decent. We get a little bit of everything.
I'll bet you do. Yeah.
Enough to keep you interested, but not burn you out.
So you grew up in Melrose Park. How much different is Mount Prospect from Melrose Park?
Same as the difference between night and day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, it's you mean culturally? It's pretty
culturally,
different.
Culturally, exactly.
The biggest difference for me is when I was a kid, there was a real sense of community.
Melrose Park.
Yeah, everybody in Melrose,
Ronnie Serpico.
The best.
Yeah,
the
I met him. He is a terrific guy.
Guy's been the mayor since 97.
Yeah.
And, you keep the outsiders and the dangerous and the bad people out. You take care of the people on the inside.
Yeah.
It's a good way to live. You know the name of everybody on your block when you're a kid?
Yeah.
7 cops living on the block.
Yeah.
You need something that gets done. It's good.
And Mount Prospect's not like that.
Mount Prospect's a little bit more sterile. It's a nice, typical suburban community, safe, but it's not the same neighborhood vibe.
Did you know you always wanted to be a cop when you were a kid?
Yeah, I wasn't consciously aware of it, but that was, every facet of being a kid, from playing cops and robbers to everything you did in Melrose Park, everything we did, cops had something to do with it, whether they were getting us in somewhere for free or they were out and about walking around or coming to the school or, you go to the Taste or the Feast and they're there and you
see
them.
I used to go to the Taste, It was excellent,
You know what? The Taste still is good because it's the only actual Taste. Everybody else has their summer festivals.
Yeah.
You got to pay $7, $8, $9 for a beef. Merrill's Park, Ronnie does a good job. $2, $3, you get a little taste of everything.
You know, my kids, we brought them up in River Forest. We used to go to the Taste. And we had this code thing. Do you remember that, Patty? We had a code thing. If you ever saw a guy who looked really, really Italian, you go, hey, give me a beef. Oh, you just say it about the guy. Give me a beef. And after a while, we're going, give me a beef. Give me a beef. Give me a beef. They're everywhere,
You lose your voice over there.
If you saw a guy who thought he might be an outfit guy.
That was it. If he thought he was an outfit guy.
Oh, okay.
Give me a beef. And I'm with 2 7-year-olds walking around doing this. Anyway, so you started working dispatch? Is that your entry to the cop biz?
You know what? I did an internship first with Addison PD.
Oh, yeah.
That was a phenomenal experience.
And how old are you when you did that?
20.
Okay, wow.
So not old enough to be a policeman yet.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting immersed in it. Trials in every part of it, from records to evidence to patrol to detectives in a gang unit.
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal experience. And, you know, I begged them. I was there on taser training day. I begged them to let me take a ride because I wanted to go back.
Tased?
Oh, yeah.
I wanted
to ride the lightning. Yep. I wanted to go back and be able to brag to everybody at the school, you know, at school and say, hey, because there were, you know, there's like basically finishing that program is you're going to do an internship.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be the only one that got to do something crazy like that because a lot of departments are pretty uptight. At least when at that time you're thinking, oh, they're so rule and regimented and uptight, can't do nothing. And Addison's over here, like, let me go on calls, go into people's houses.
Yeah.
Really
were they
being
really
immersed.
Yeah.
This is 09, so
yeah.
The modern world, but not quite, not as progressive as we've become. But nonetheless, so I'm in Addison, and they're doing taser training that day, and I begged them, and I begged them, and they finally like, all right.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, we got to film it. And they're like, okay. Now, this is before, you know, everything is filmed. The court cases are still going for whether you can film people in public or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new concept. So the idea that you would film this, put it online, post it, go viral, it's still before the time that that's the standard.
Yeah.
So they made a video for me, and I was so proud and a little tech savvy, and I put it on YouTube.
Now, did you get knocked back on your...
Knocked back? No, man. You lock up, and you drop like a sack of potatoes. You're down.
Yeah.
It hurt like hell. And honestly, I'm one of the few people that believe this, but I think if you're going to carry a taser, you should have to take it because you should know what you're doing to somebody else.
Oh, yeah, so you know what you're doing to somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
Most people respond, well, you didn't take a shot, and you get to carry a gun, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Taser hurts like hell.
I'll bet.
But it was awesome. So I got the video. I got the memento. I had an awesome experience. And then I put it online. And next thing you know, we got the administration for the department call me. It's this big to-do.
Oh, no.
It's a big, you know, investigation with the, you know, the internally and the internship program. I think a couple guys caught a couple days off for it.
Oh, wow.
And I did my best trying not to throw anybody under the bus. But at the same time, I mean, like, you know, what can I do? I'm a college kid, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just excited to be there.
Yeah.
And these guys...
weren't beefing about it. You had volunteered.
No, I'm 99% sure some other jealous student saw it and then made us, hey, he put it online. I didn't tell him I was going to do that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to show people. You know, I was proud of it. Look at this. You know, it's not a big deal now, but at the time it was. So, so after Addison,
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When you get tased, do you crap your pants? Is that part of the thing?
No, I've heard people talk about that, but honestly, when that electricity goes through you, you tighten everything up.
Yeah.
There's nothing coming out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
your sphincter goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But after the Addison internship, I started my real law enforcement career as a dispatcher in Stone Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll bet you got some wild calls there, huh?
You know what? I had
Stone Park, for those who don't know, there's a couple of strip clubs.
Seven. There at one point it was 7 and 4 blocks.
Holy cow.
And not that it really matters.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but Stone Park has decades long history.
Scores was Scores. That was a real high end one, wasn't it?
Scores is nice. They got a higher end one now.
Oh really?
Yeah, they had a really high end one at one point, but it folded. The nuns won. They were right.
Oh,
now you put it right next to the nunnery.
I remember that.
Yeah, why wouldn't you put that there? Very, very on brand for Stone Park and Miles Park. But you know what? Stone Park was a really fun community to get law enforcement experience in because decades long history of, you know, from the 50s onward to the mob from organized crime to 6 a.m. bars at one point.
Yeah, 6 a.m.
Yeah, they were 4 a.m. when I was a dispatcher there. Now they're down to 2. They've done the mayor's done a nice job of cleaning the town up, but it was still a lot of fun. Again, phenomenal experience for someone who wanted to be a policeman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're dispatching shootings. Personally, you know, I'm dispatching one every 28 days. And when I say one, I mean someone or something is hit. And for a town that's 4 blocks, that's where I came up with the 4 blocks.
Oh, yeah.
4 blocks with 5,000 residents. That's a lot.
That's Stone Park. Holy cow.
But Stone Park is very endearing to me. I had phenomenal time there.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
And how long did you do that?
You know, I was only there for 2 years, and then I did an internship too, a second internship while I was working there. And then Schiller Park hired me, which is basically two towns over.
Right next door. Yeah.
And I jumped ship for double the pay, and then dispatching. In Stone Park, I just dispatched police. Schiller Park, I did Police and Fire. So building my acumen, trying to expand my skill sets while I continue to work to become the police.
Now, there was a story about the Schiller Park Auxiliary you were going to tell us?
Yeah, so, and I got to keep in mind that I have a lot of...
Don't incriminate yourself.
No, no, I won't, but I'm, you know, I have a lot of baselines in my head, so I know the background context, but perhaps not all our listeners will, but auxiliaries are basically, they're not police officers, they're not sworn, they haven't gone to an academy, but they play an ancillary role, so they've got specialized training, they carry firearms, and they wear a similar uniform.
Oh, they carry firearms, I didn't know that.
Yeah, many, most of the time. In Schiller Park, they do, a lot of the communities in the... inner ring suburbs of Chicago do because of propensity for and for danger or potential violence, but they do a lot of a lot of the shit work that to free up cops so they can go out there and be on the street and be available.
Yeah.
So
they're a needed, they're a necessity auxiliary cops, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they get paid less because they're part-time employees, but they're just as valuable in being out there, eyes and ears on the on the streets, and being another set of hands if you need it when something hits the fan. So. In Schiller Park, you know, not just in Schiller Park, in a lot of communities, auxiliary is a pretty political position. Usually you want people from the community taking on these roles because you're, you know, entrusting with the badge and a representation of the village. And you want to make sure you're picking the right people if you're a mayor or elected official. Right. So you want to make sure that, you know, someone you trust, a cousin, a nephew, gets in one of those positions. So sometimes you don't pull from the wider, you're not pulling from a wider pool of more qualified applicants. And, you know, the cops, you know, the full-time officers working next to auxiliaries thinking, oh my God.
Where'd they get this guy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, one of those guys, so in Schiller Park, we usually had two dispatchers working because that was the need for the call volume. Stone Park, you're by yourself. You're
one guy.
Yeah.
The whole village.
Not good.
Yeah.
But in Schiller Park, it was two. So I would often work with this veteran, incredibly experienced, super intelligent full-time dispatcher. I was part-time in Schiller Park because I was still going to school. And big firearm enthusiast. I mean, just a big gun guy. He also was a part-time policeman because out of a hobby, because he just loved the profession. And but his vocation was being a dispatcher. And so he had a great rapport with the guys. He taught me the ways and the flow of the water, and it was just great working with him. But he was big on firearms.
Yeah.
So we were having a discussion on firearms one day, and the auxiliary that was on, one of the auxiliaries that was on duty comes walking in, and here's the discussion, and we're talking about a Glock. This dispatcher, this other guy, was talking about what he carried when he was on the street and this, that, and the other. And so the auxiliary goes, oh, I'm carrying, that's what I have. And he takes it, reaches into his holster, and he takes it out, and he's just holding it, and he flags this veteran dispatcher that I'm working with.
What do you mean he flags
him? Take the guns in his hand and he waves it in front of him, meaning the barrel crosses his path. If there was an accident or something, it'd be bad. I mean, Jesus, there's no muscle, no muzzle discipline.
Yeah.
Just totally unprofessional.
So he was an idiot.
Oh, my God. Idiot, dangerous, everything.
Yeah.
So the dispatcher starts laying into him and screaming about, proper firearm safety. What kind of training do you see? You know better. What are you thinking? Where's your common sense?
Yeah.
And this guy's getting all defensive, saying, "Oh, hold on, take it easy. It's not a big deal, And he's still now there's a pissing match going,
and he's got
screaming,
a gun
it
in
is
his
a big
hand.
Deal. Yeah. And he's still got the gun. He goes, finally, he shouts, "Don't worry about it. There's not any bullets in it." And then everybody just stops. And when I say everybody, now more people have.
Oh,
there's
been,
a, you know,
there's
it's a
an
small
argument.
Station. So it's like, and it just stops everyone in their tracks. And the dispatcher I'm working with goes, "What the F did you just say?" He goes, "Yeah, I don't keep any bullets in it. I don't shoot anybody." He goes, "Here, look." And he takes the magazine out and he shows he's walking around a gun with no bullets. And he was just this was so preposterous. This is so absurd. The dispatcher just thought, he goes, "You know what? Just leave this room.
Yeah.
Just leave this room." I mean, you don't even, what do you say to somebody who's entrusted to walk around wearing a police uniform, carrying a gun and protecting the public?
It's not loaded.
Just walking around with no bullets. That was just an incredible experience. I wish the words could accurately convey what we felt in that moment because it was incredible. But that's very on brand for that type of nonsense.
Okay.
Auxiliary, sometimes.
Barney Fife time.
aspiring to be.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And now, What about the dispatcher with the sock?
Oh, man, there was another veteran dispatcher. And this seasoned veteran. I mean, this guy's retired multiple times. He's doing this just to do it. I mean, he's been a policeman going back to the 60s. It's 2011-ish. And he's just not in the mood for any bullshit. So we would have a lot of drunks come stumbling into the station. You know, there's a lot of bars in the area, Schiller Park.
They walk into the station?
Yeah, all hours of the night, they walk in. They want to make whatever their needs are at the time. Yeah. A lot of people want to stumble in and saying, you need to give me a ride home.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all kinds of non-essential, non-emergency related, just not drunken nonsense. And some drunk came in one day and started, he wanted a ride home. And this guy's like, we're not a taxi service. I'm not calling an officer. And he demanded to speak with the officer. And dispatcher's like, I'm not taking an officer off the street for this.
Yeah.
And he goes, he starts swearing at him and telling him to go F himself and everything. And this dispatcher gave it back to him a little bit.
Yeah.
Standing up for himself and like, get your drunk butt out of the lobby.
Yeah.
And finally the guy says, well, I want to talk to your supervisor right now. It's, I don't know what hour it is, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. This guy goes, no problem. I'll go get my supervisor. So in the dispatch room at that time, you're also basically the front desk. So when people come into the lobby, you're at the window talking to them, whoever comes in, assessing their needs. And then if 911 call comes out or something, you just put, you know, you walk away from them and go do what you got to do and then come back. So right in front of the glass at that time, and Schiller Park no longer has in-house dispatching, and this person is long since retired. But at the time, we were in-house employees, and there was a cabinet, and every dispatcher had a drawer assigned to them for storage needs, training manuels, whatever resources.
I got a feeling I know where this is going.
So he goes and he leans down, bends down in front of the the glass. The drunk's still standing in the lobby, opens the drawer, and I see him take out a sock, and he puts a sock over his one hand, and then he turns, he looks at me, and gives me a look like, watch this. And this is a 70-something-year-old man, okay? This is outstanding. Old-school Italian guy. And, again, not taking anybody's shit. So he goes, sir, my supervisor's here. He lifts his finger up, gives him, like, you know, 1 second. And then he stops, turns around, and then turns back around with the sock lifted up. And he goes, hi, how you doing? I'm the supervisor. How can I help you? And so the drunk is – it just – oh, man, it set this guy off so bad. And for the next however many minutes it was, he wouldn't even acknowledge a drunk other than through the sock puppet. He finally got this guy to leave the station. But it was really something. I don't know if that guy came back the next day when he was sober, filed a complaint or not. But that's how it got handled in the moment.
Good for that guy.
Yeah. At the time, I thought it was the funniest thing, and I just think now as a supervisor, I'm like, oh my god, what would I do if somebody did that? But it was great, man. It was back when the world was simple. Like, all you had to do, drunk. No, we're not giving you a ride home. Stop being ignorant. Yeah.
All right. Now you've been a detective. Tell us about you've done a lot of financial crime stuff. Oh, I know what my interest was. The romance scams, what are those all about?
Well, that's part of the bigger ruse scams that I worked on.
Okay.
Yeah, so after doing patrol and gangs, I did gangs for 2 years, and that got me promoted to detective. And I had a boss at the time in detectives who was absolutely afraid that I would go out there, drum shit up, and cause trouble. Cause trouble for him from an administrative standpoint.
Yeah.
And being like, oh my God, is he going to get a use of force and create paperwork? Are we going to bring all kind of chaos?
Yeah.
He wanted a nice, smooth, easy day.
Yeah.
So he found early on when I got promoted to detective that if he kept giving me, you know, white collar financial crime cases, he'd have me stuck looking at bank records all day, and I wouldn't be out on the street. I wouldn't be away from my desk. Huh. He'd have me
out of his hair.
Yeah. And, you know, limited risk. For him, for the paperwork side of things. So I decided to grab the bull by the horns and embrace it, and then I started getting a lot of financial scams, including romance scams, where some unknowing senior citizen, usually a widower, would go online, try to find new love late in life, and get tricked into thinking they were talking to some beautiful 20-year-old woman that was in love with them, because that makes sense, and as opposed to And in reality, it's some dude in the basement in Nigeria or Rajasthan, India, and they're just tricking this guy and convincing him to send money. He's like, give me $3,000 for the airline tickets, and then, I need another $5,000 to pass customs because there's a fee. And they just keep going until the guy gets wise to it, and they move on to the next victim. But I had one victim who was convinced that he met a real woman online, and she was a big construction supervisor that was brought to Germany from the U.S. because of her skill set here and her role in some big corporation here. And it was just a matter of getting through all the admin stuff, and she was going to be on the next flight, and she was going to see him, and they were going to, it was going to be bliss until, he was done here. And his kids, he's got adult children. They're like, you got to stop, This is a scam. Mom is gone. You're not thinking straight. Because when people...
Did the kids get you involved, or how did that...
Yeah, he wasn't believing the kids. He was absolutely convinced, and the kids are saying, Dad, it's a scam. And when people are vulnerable, losing a loved one, they cannot think it straight. So the kids took him on Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil has a whole...
Dr. Phil, the guy on TV?
Dr. Phil, the Dr. Phil?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does a two-part episode with my guy. They send a production team out to Germany.
No kidding.
Do a mini criminal investigation and basically show this guy this is a scam. And then once that's confirmed, because he lived in my town, so he came over and he got a file report. He's out $150,000.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Poor guy. Real nice guy. Good family.
$150,000.
Yep. So I worked that case. Unfortunately, wasn't able to do anything with it. Overseas offenders. But romance scams is one of the big ones. But I also worked ruse crimes, more commonly known as gypsy crimes. We try not to use that word, but for the people listening so they know what that means. Con games, scamming people, dent scams, seal coating scams.
Roma
are a subset of the Romani people, and there are a large number of offenders who culturally ethnically identify as Romani.
Yeah.
So we have a large population of them here in the Chicagoland area. I know a lot of them. And something unique about, being Romani is there's a language that many people that are not part of the culture don't understand. You can't find official translators. You're not going to find many dictionaries.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many dialects that it's a mostly spoken language rather than written. So it's a matter of it's often used to communicate while committing crime. So if anything's captured on video or they're in the presence of law enforcement, you're nearly speaking with impunity. So
because no one knows what the hell they're saying.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. I worked ruse crimes. I was assigned to state police for 3 years. I worked with them informally, a group dedicated to ruse burglaries, but we worked all kinds of them. And I was assigned to them formally for 3 years. I became an inspector and state police, an employee with the state police, and it was just nonstop. Catching these guys, following up, helping other towns identify offenders and from surveillance video or recordings. And, it's an undervalued crime, meaning, there's not a lot of interest. It's not flashy. Yeah. When you do drug work, someone can go in front of the cameras and stack up all the kilos of cocaine. Or you can do gang work or organized crime and show all the guns you confiscate on a table. And the public can see it. It's flashy. It's sexy. It's like, hey, look what we did.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of sexiness in catching a guy who broke into some old lady's house or rused his way in saying he needed to check the water or he's with ComEd and we got to check the electric.
Yeah.
Getting there for $150,000 and then catching that guy and then finding out he already spent all that money and not getting it back.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of glamour. But, it was an important aspect of law enforcement to take serious because you got real victims, real people losing their entire life savings, a lot of Depression-era people kept everything in their house and not in the bank. As opposed to,
cash.
Victimless. Cash.
Yeah.
Victimless drug crimes. It was a real shame. But it was eye-opening, a lot of fun, a lot of shenanigans, good time.
So that was like your specialty for a
while. That was my specialty. I was...
And to a certain extent, it's just a large syndicate, these people, right?
It falls under organized crime, but it's really loosely organized crime. You have groups of itinerant populations of criminals that organize themselves into groups on a temporary basis to work together and let's go do a bunch of crimes until it's inconvenient or until one of them doesn't get his fair share of the cut.
Yeah.
And then they have an argument, fall out, and then they reach out to new people in the community and create a new group.
Wow.
It's a multi-billion dollar per year industry, at least in the United States. as far as the dollar amount, the known dollar amount to the
types of
crimes.
Have you ever
done
a movie on these guys?
You know what's funny? Robert Duvall, not on the crime aspect, but Robert Duvall produced or directed, I forget, or maybe both, a movie called Angelo, My Love, after running into a young Romani child at a deli in New York. And I just thought that was the most interesting thing. He's got this whole film about it. But no, I don't think there's any flashy movies. There's some pop culture that makes reference to it. I mean, one of my favorite shows, The Peaky Blinders, makes loose reference to, Irish Romani.
Sure,
and,
sure.
Their role in semi-organized crime. But it's not like what we're seeing out there today. I mean, these guys are professional burglars. They're professional con artists. They're professional scammers. You got some of them. This lady, her name was, she was named after a planet. How
Uranus?
About that? Oh, man. You know what? Her name is Venus.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
her name
is
Venus. And this, I have to say, because it's going to be important when I ask her. She, her whole thing is is a sweetheart swindle. It's a type of romance scam where you bump into a senior citizen and you can, you build up a relationship with them randomly after you pick a target, maybe see him at the grocery store.
Oh, wow.
Little old man pushing a cart by himself, taking the groceries out to the Buick. She says, "Oh, sir, I can help you." Or they pretend like, "Oh, hey, Mr. So-and-so, do you remember me? I used to be the little girl who lived down the street." And what's this guy going to say? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So they go out for coffee, and then over time they build a relationship. Next thing you know, she's helping care for him. She's at the house three nights a week.
Wow.
She's his informal caregiver, and then they build perhaps a romantic relationship. She ends up on the car title, the house deed, the bank account statements.
Wow.
It's a real professional operation. But we got my partner in the task force at the time, longtime Chicago detective Jim Frail, phenomenal detective, and this was like his bread and butter. I mean, he was a subject matter expert on these types of crimes. So I was just helping him. We tried to pull her over because he had... he was ready to arrest her on one of his cases.
Venus. Yeah.
So she took off. We got in a pursuit. She makes it into her house. Chased her all over her house. She makes it inside, and we surround the house. And then the supervisor at the time was getting ready to get some breaching equipment, and because she also had a warrant, and we're going to break down the door.
Yeah.
And then finally, through a little diplomacy, convinced her to come on out.
Yeah.
So she did, and we got back to the station. $1.5 million she got this guy for.
Wow.
Yeah, $1.5 million, and state's attorney's office rejected the charges.
What?
Yeah, Cook County State's attorney's office rejected the charges. Yeah, that would have been at the beginning of Kim Fox's era over at the state's attorney's office. Not her personally, but at the time she had taken over the reins. And, so you take these opportunities when you get people like this in custody just to make small talk and just figure them out, people read. So I asked Venus in the middle of all this, I go, "You know what? Venus, what's your favorite planet?" She looked at me dumbfounded. She had never considered it before. And she said, Mars. Okay. All right. Mars it is. But that's gypsies, ruse, crimes.
Was she attractive?
Maybe for a 70-year-old man, I'd say she looked good.
I'm 75.
I'll set you up with her.
No, thank you. Yeah. I got nothing. That was a great. All right, so now, do you like what you're doing now?
That's a good question. I get asked that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm still formulating an answer to that. Well, I like what I do. I still love being the police. It's a noble.
Yeah.
It's a noble profession. It's a terrible time to be here.
It's a noble profession. Yes.
I think so.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I like the idea. So that's why I want to be a cop. When I was in Melrose, there was, like I said, a real strong sense of community. Somebody came on our block that didn't belong. One of the cops cutting the grass, driving down the street, getting groceries. Somebody's gonna saw it and make sure that we looked out for each other.
Yeah.
They protected me.
Yeah.
I felt safe. And when something did happen or we needed something, whatever it was in the village, we go to one of the cops on the street and said, "Hey, what should I do about this?" And it's like, "I'll take care of it. We'll figure it out. I'll help you."
Yeah.
And making
the
real
good old days.
The good old days.
Yeah.
We never know about the good old days when we're actually in them.
Yeah.
Andy Bernard said that on The Office. I don't get any Office fans, but I thought it was a profound observation. But I wanted to be able to share that and continue creating that reality for myself and everybody around me, my orbit, because of how valuable I thought it was to have the sense of we're all in it together. We're all here for each other.
Yeah.
So I love that part of it. I love being in uniform, being on the street. But now in a supervisor capacity as a sergeant, I'm not a doer anymore.
Yeah.
It's about managing people and personalities. And I'm struggling to see you know, how I'm going to continue to adapt, because I really miss the doing.
You miss the hunt.
I do.
Yeah.
I really do.
Sure.
You know, being able to, like, make a difference and then see that difference right in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people have jobs, it's like waiting tables. And there's nothing wrong with waiting tables, but at the end of the night, that table's in the same place it started. And you could reset it 10 times for 10 sets of customers, but the table's still the table. And at the end of my 8 or 10 hour shift as a policeman, I feel like I've taken steps forward because I helped this person over here jump their car. I helped this person over here have a sense of security, whatever it was.
And
it really had a lot of meaning behind it. And now as a supervisor, I don't get to do it in the same way anymore. So do I like it? I do like it. I'm just learning to adapt.
Yeah.
But it's a natural career progression to take promotions. And
how long have you been on the job? 13 years?
12.
Okay.
Actually, what's today?
Today's December.
Yesterday was 12.
Okay, yeah.
How about that?
Well, any other stories you have up your sleeve there?
I got a lot of stories. I just got to be careful because I get a lot of people indicted.
Okay, you don't want that.
You know,
we don't want to get anybody indicted.
I'll just share. So I'm just going to
stream
of consciousness.
A
yeah, what do you got?
And since we've been doing the show, we started this show in 2019, focusing on police, firefighters, paramedics, and nurses. 2020, it really got bad for the police,
yep.
And it continues that way.
It sure does, exponentially.
Yeah, it's just awful, and I feel so bad for the cops on the street and everything, and it's hard to, you know, what's in it for them, you know? It's like they get treated like dirt, and nobody's on your side. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I mean, I have a lot of feelings,
yeah.
Some of which I can share, some yeah. I obviously can't. I'll say in general, at the core of this new reality that we're in,
yeah.
It's never going to change. I'm tired of hearing people tell me that the pendulum's going to swing back.
Oh, you don't? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And if it does, it won't be my lifetime, because it's going to... The impact of George Floyd in 2020, not just this profession, but society at large, you know, and it's been absolutely profound. And you can't just undo that. You can't rewind it. You can't unwind it. And every step forward is a step away from the way things used to be. And I don't think we're ever going to circle back to it. But if we do, it's going to be a long, long path. And that's okay. We just have to adapt to the consequences of that. So without getting, you know, obviously what happened in Minneapolis was terrible. It's atrocious. But the fallout from that, the domino effect, the changes to laws.
Yeah.
And how...
It's like people were brainwashed. I have a not-for-profit, and one of the things we do, we want to make a film of all these interviews. And we were submitting for a grant thing, and I brought up George Floyd and referred to him as a petty criminal. And the guy went nuts on me and said I was a white supremacist. I said, what? This guy was a piece of crap. And it's like they made him a saint. It's ridiculous. It's like living in a bizarro world, I'm telling you.
You know what the hard thing is? At the end of the day, whatever legal, social, or moral justifications existed at any point in time throughout the entirety of that interaction with him, the end of the day is what Derek Chauvin did, is there's no justification to it.
Yeah.
And now that's your catalyst for a lot of other things that are not even, they're not directly related, they're not even indirectly related, but we're making changes here, precautionary changes, anticipatory changes, and we're basically decriminalizing a lot of things. And that's having a real impact on everyday people.
Yeah.
In my area, in this area, in big cities, in small towns, in Illinois and across the U.S., and as we continue to decriminalize or legalize certain conduct and behavior, because we are deciding as a society, or at least the politicians on behalf of society are deciding that we don't value this anymore, there's a corresponding change in the effects of that. So now people are coming, committing smaller crimes. More small mom-and-pop stores are having more retail thefts, and it's not getting enforced.
Oh, yeah.
We're not making arrests. We're not recovering proceeds. We're not we're not getting restitution, and it perpetuates itself and keeps going. We're not arresting people for traffic offenses and suspended and misdemeanor driver's licenses, or at least we're not taking them into physical custody and bringing them to the station and getting their fingerprints. So how many times are people who have fingerprints and they're wanted for other crimes, or they have other things associated, and we're just doing the paperwork on this traffic stop, and traffic stops have decreased, and the politicians seem to be okay with it.
Yeah.
And the only people that are really suffering from the effects of this are people like you and me, our neighbors, our family members, regular everyday blue collar people are feeling the trickle down effects of this. But big picture, politicians and various institutions in society that have a political angle, they're getting the numbers and the data they want, and it's not
grounded. They don't care.
Reality, no. Yeah. But I continue to do it. The brave men and women I work with continue to do it because at our core, there's still a need for us. We can still do good. We just have to be smarter about how we do it. And overall, policing has changed from catching people before they do a crime, finding people that look suspicious, stopping people before things happen. And it's evolved to wait until people call us when they need us, which is usually after the fact, and then work it backwards in an intelligent way. So working smarter, not harder. And, I have my own personal opinions about that, but at the end of the day, that's the expectation from society, and that's the world we're living in. So crimes are happening more, and we have to be at the top of the curve for technology and strategies to reverse engineer it and identify the offender and get them after.
You're very articulate.
Am I ruining it? Am I bringing it down? Am I being too hoity-toity?
No.
Okay.
I'm asking, do you want to run for office or anything? Because you'd be a great spokesman, I'm telling you.
All right. I need a campaign manager.
Well, how much dough you got?
Well, how much experience you got?
Plenty.
I know. Yeah. I voted for that guy.
What guy?
Mr. Chewy Garcia.
Oh, well, that was making a buck. What can I tell you?
Listen, everything's on the square.
Yeah. Nothing's on the square.
Everything's on the square.
No, but actually, I don't know if you ever thought about that, but you'd be certainly a good spokesman. You're very articulate, and you know what you're talking about, and you've been there. That's the important thing. You've been there. Yeah.
I still got more places to go, but maybe when we get to the end of the tracks, we'll see what happens.
That's a good line. Yeah.
But right now, you got to live in the moment and just enjoy it.
Yeah. Are you married?
Married. Got a 1-year-old daughter. Got another one on the way.
Oh, God
due
bless
in April.
You. Oh, that's
Thank
terrific.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
How'd you meet your wife?
An Italian cafe in Melrose Park. What other way?
That's great.
That's right.
Good
What's
for
that?
You.
Danny's?
No. Danny's gone. No, this was Il Poveretto. It's since gone. With everything else good in Melrose Park. It's Italian, and then it came and went, and that's that. But yeah, we met at a nice Italian cafe.
So you have two kids?
Gonna have two. I got one and a half.
Okay. Yeah. One and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Did you grow up in a big family? Brothers, sisters?
I got one brother, younger. He's got autism, so he's...
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah, God bless my parents for being able to just be phenomenal in that regard.
Yeah.
It's really inspiring to think about what they do. But, that just goes to lend the idea about what policing is to me. I mean, who's going to be there for him, when we're out here?
Absolutely.
And, these people come from far away and then come to communities like Mount Prospect, and they just... It's a free for all right now,
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just in Mount Prospect; it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, from cattle to converted thefts.
It seems like it is. Hey, we got a friend who was a Forest Park cop, and he tells us it's like the Wild West.
You know what though? See, so I after Schiller Park, I actually briefly worked at Oak Park PD. They sent me through the academy. Mm-hmm. I was there for 6 months, and then thank God Mount Prospect offered me a job because I had already been on their list. And when I was in Oak Park, the Forest Park guys were like the rough and tumble, ready to defend you in the middle of the night against anyone seeking to do evil. Like you looked at them like those are cowboys. You don't mess around over there. And it was really nice to give me that Melrose Park sense of community. Oak Park, very different beast.
Oh, yeah.
And, you'd ask me if I had any more stories, just kind of stream of consciousness. My time in Oak Park, it was very insular. They didn't get along with their surrounding communities. They didn't work well as far as policing.
Well, it's run by communists, Oak Park, let's be frank, right? Come on. It's a communist country, basically. Go ahead.
It's different. It's a bubble.
I didn't mean
it's
to
a bubble. You. No. We're interrupting, building on it. It's nice. You can say things I can't. But I'll say I didn't stay there very long. Fortunate to have gotten certified and then moved on to greener pastures and end up in Mount Prospect. But I remember that there was a call in Oak Park where Berwyn had a shooting one block south of the border, was stopped at a red light on the border. We have the Berwyn radio in the squad car, and the Oak Park, my training officer is like, we're not we're not going to that. That's not our jurisdiction. And this idea about jurisdiction is nonsense. The state, we can go anywhere in the state we want. You got two people shot at a corner a block away. I can see the stop sign at that intersection. I go to start making the turn, and he screams at me that, you know, that's not our town. Go back north, so if they come north, we can catch them.
Yeah.
I said, what happens if they go southeast or west? And they tell me, yeah, that's Berwyn's problem. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had another, maybe on another show, a little bit more liquor. I'll share some more Park stories.
No, no,
but that's that one. That one is a a nice summary of my experience. So I got out of there.
Yeah.
But the Forest Park guys, they were doing God's work.
Oh yeah, they're good guys. Yeah. The guy we know is just terrific. He's from Ireland. He's dynamite. But he's going to be retiring soon.
You should get one of the Ghostbusters on your show.
Who are they?
When I was in Stone Park, we had two Stone Park officers, paranormal cops. They had a Maywood guy and an Elk Grove guy. They had a TV show.
Oh, Ghostbusters Cops?
No, no, it was, no. I'm calling them Ghostbusters, but that's what we would call them. But it was called Paranormal Cops.
Yeah.
And one of them is, or two of them are still active on the job.
And where are they, Stone Park?
They were in Stone Park at the time. I'll give you the details later where they're at now because I don't want to.
Sure.
Maybe they're trying to move on from that. But what a great show. You know, you see these guys handling calls, dealing with drunks and bar fights, and they're dragging prisoners in because these guys are fighting, spitting on them. Uh-huh. And then you turn around and see them on A&E doing investigations for ghosts in the room. It was a good time.
Okay. We got to wrap this up, Nick. You've been terrific.
All right. Not as good as Jeff Lang, but I'll get there.
Come back. Come back. And do me a favor and stay safe out there.
I will. Thanks for having me on.
God
I appreciate
bless you
it.
And your family. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll take a little break on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friend.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey, everybody. This is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back some more Hibernian Radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Cops and firefighters risk their lives almost every day, so they shouldn't have to risk their hard-earned dough in any get-rich schemes or the blather of old pals in the real estate biz. And good luck trying to figure out the stock market or cryptocurrency or even economics 101 when you come home exhausted at the end of your shift. What you need is somebody you can trust. And they're in short supply these days. Hey, take it from me. I've lost fortunes in showbiz because I thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I wound up bankrupt and broke. It took me a long time to decide to find a friend I could trust who had my family's best interests at heart. That friend was my late pal, Joe Madden. I met him as he passed the basket at St. Luke's, and I'd turn my pockets inside out as he came to my pew, and I'd say, "I'm tapioca." He laughed, but didn't stop him from supporting my films and showbiz endeavors over the years. Joe Madden had my back. A few years before he died, Joe started Madden Funds with his sons, Mike and Danny. The Maddens and Houlihans have been pals for a long, long time. They can advise the best path for your investments. Madden Funds will have your back too. Need advice on your 401k or your rollover IRA? You can trust Madden Funds to help you protect and grow your investments now and in your family's future. Go to their website, maddenfunds.com, or call Mike or Dan Madden at 708-848.
And we are back on Hibernian Radio. What a great guest. Our thanks to Nick. How do I pronounce it? Nick Mavroganis. Nick Mavroganis. There we go. He's dynamite. He'll be back. But I also want to remind everyone now, if you missed our party, which is going on currently right now at this moment, it goes till 8 o'clock over at Barney Callahan's Irish Pub. It's our 6th annual Hibernian Hooligan Ball. It's also my 75th birthday. And we're featuring Liam Durkin, Catherine Cowell, Irish Dancers, and the Emerald Society, and just a whole bunch of great stuff. And if you missed that, but you still want to help out because you believe in the work we do, whether it's shining a spotlight on our Irish first responders, our film festival, the only Irish-American film festival in the world, our show, The Hooli's Hooli, or our other films, books, Chicago Irish mythology, films, any of our stuff. We're in the midst of building a digital platform, the Digital Diaspora. It should be ready by January, we hope. Keep an eye out for that, but you can help. You can help. Throw us a bone. Throw some dough our way. It's tax deductible. Go to hibernianmedia.org/donate. We need the dough because this stuff costs money. What can I tell you? We appreciate our audience. We appreciate all you police officers, firefighters, paramedics, and nurses who listen every week. God bless you all. Okay, Billy, no. You know when I'm walking down Western Avenue and I look at the window, Ken's, Wrong's, Hearts, and those great Irish saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist. He says to me, "Hey, holy, who died?" William Quinn, age 92. And a big shout-out to Tom Downs for helping us every week with the obits. William Quinn, age 92, beloved husband of Barbara Quinn, father of William III, Brian and Paul. God rest his lovely soul, William Quinn. Mary Ann J. Loftus, age 75, loving sister of Judy, Sarah, and their fourth sister, cousin Kathy Kelly. Mary Ann had a proud career for over 35 years with the Social Security Administration. She was an avid bowler and a proud White Sox fan. In lieu of flowers, donations to Leo High School Scholarship Fund. And the arrangements, Billy, were made by Sheehy, where all the right people go. Karen L. Kelly, age 75, beloved wife of 51 years to Robert F. Kelly Sr., retired Chicago Police Department. She was a devoted mother of Kimberly and Robert. She was a longtime parishioner of St. Denis and St. Basil Church. In lieu of flowers, donations to the American Lung Association, and Billy, the funeral was handled by Sheehy, where all the right people go. Mary Ellen Cregan, Nee Reardon, daughter of the late Matthew and Mary Reardon from Macroom, County Cork, Ireland. Born and died on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, and her 82nd birthday. She achieved the mission she was born to achieve. That's pretty good. Loving wife of John, retired Chicago Police Department for 61 years. Cherished mother of Michael, Kathy. Faith and family were most important to Mary Ellen. She had a heart of gold, was a friend to everybody she met. Many thanks to her special friends at WON, Wait Off Now Club. She was an active member of St. Julie Billard Church and Senior Club. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. God rest her soul, Mary Ellen Cregan. Pat Cloonan, age 66. Beloved husband Yvonne Cloonan, whom he married in 1986, loving father of Neil Cloonan of Plainfield and Ryan Cloonan of Des Moines. I don't know how to say it. Des Moines, yeah, that's it. Pat proudly grew up as one of Chicago's Southside Irishmen. He attended St. Tommy Moore Catholic Church. 1975 graduate of Bogan High School. He served in the United States Navy from 75 to 79 aboard the USS Coral Sea. After his honorable discharge, he served as an officer with the Cook County Department of Corrections for 30 years until his retirement in 2017. While his sons were young, he worked countless part-time jobs to provide the best life possible for his family. Pat was a member of St. Mary Immaculate Catholic Church in Plainfield. He lived socializing from his garage with a cold bud and hot Marlboro. God bless his rest his lovely soul, Pat Cloonan. Elaine Mulcahy, 94. Beloved wife of the late Thomas P. Mulcahy, mother of James, Sheila, Thomas, the late Catherine, Maureen, Edwin, Joseph, and Margaret Mary. God rest her lovely soul, Elaine Mulcahy. Joe O'Donnell Sr. passed from this world at the too young age of 54. He died suddenly and unexpectedly from heart failure and appears to not have suffered. Joey, or Joe as he was called by many of us, grew up in Deerfield, Illinois, attended Holy Cross Elementary School and High School, Deerfield High School. He survived by his mother, Mary O'Donnell, his sisters, Mary Jo and Ann O'Donnell. God rest his lovely soul, Joe O'Donnell Jr. Sharon A. Kennedy, 56. Sharon was the beloved wife of Jerome Kennedy, a loving mother to her precious children, Megan, James, and Maeve. Sharon left an undeniable mark on the world and those around her through her presence. Her hugs were infectious and brightened every life she touched. She loved to laugh, and her outgoing personality ensured she made friends in every room she entered. She truly celebrated her day every day as a gift. She made every person feel welcome. Whether you had known her for 30 years or just met her, she made you feel special and as if you could do anything in the world. To say Sharon lived life to the fullest until the very end would be an understatement. Her recent journeys alone took her to parties, concerts, college visits, marathons, New York City, Ireland, Hilton Head, and Paris. God, rest her lovely soul. She truly loved her family more than anything in the world. And in lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, Sharon Kennedy. Greg Fahey passed away at the age of 69, dual citizen of the Republic of Ireland and the USA, which I am also. Preceded in death by his parents, Patrick and Helen. Proud and loving father of Colin and Dylan, former husband of Kathleen, graduate of Our Lady of Lourdes, God rest his lovely soul, Greg Fahey. Jamie O'Brien, age 67, of Madison, husband of Loretta, father of James, Daniel, Catherine, and Kevin O'Brien, the late Kevin O'Brien. He was a proud member of Local 399 and in lieu of flowers, donations to SIDS of Illinois. Jackie M. Flood, finally, age 92, formerly at LaGrange Park, beloved wife of the late Paul Flood, loving mother of Nancy, Kathy, Paul, Pat, and Bob. Jackie loved traveling with family and friends. She treasured her keepsakes. Traveled all over the world. Never found a beach she didn't like, but her absolute favorite was the family cottage in Lake Michigan. God rest her lovely soul, Jackie Flood. And finally, Bernard James Kelly, 91 of Oak Forest, or Oak Park, Tinley Park, former mayor of Oak Forest. Bernard was a loving husband of Joan Kelly for 69 years, father of Joanne Kelly, Nancy, Loretta, Eileen, and Daniel. A firm believer in the duty to one's community and church, Bernard faithfully served Oaks Forest as a village trustee, director of civil defense, city manager, and mayor. As mayor, he was instrumental in bringing Lake Michigan water to Oak Forest, and he oversaw the town's transition from a village to a city form of government. He went to MIT and the University of Chicago, earning his BS in chemical engineering. He was a dedicated Rotarian who mentored multiple individuals throughout his life. God rest his lovely soul, Bernard James Kelly. Let's close up the bit with Crip Billy, and we'll be right back with these messages from our friends. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
years ago, Roger Sheehy started his family business with his sons. Sheehys have handled a lot of Southside Irish families since then, mine included. When my late brother Willie died, my brother Danny and I went out to meet with Bob Sheehy to discuss the wake and funeral. Bob and Jimmy Sheehy are quite simply the best. But there's something else about the Sheehys. Willie was a bachelor. He died alone. The nurses at Northwestern gave me his belongings when I went to pick up his stuff after his death. They gave me his wallet, clothes, and some cash that was on him when he died. As Danny and I discussed what suit to bury Willie in, I handed the cash, $88, to Bob Sheehy, and I said, "Put this in his pocket before the wake." Danny looked at me funny, and I said, "Just some walking around money in case he needs it wherever he's going." But Bob Sheehy said, "Of course." He knew I was grieving, in my own way, for probably my favorite brother. I'll never forget that. Sure, the Sheehys were great through the whole thing, and as I did Willie's eulogy at Christ the King, I saw Bob standing in the back of the church, laughing along with the rest of our family as I told some Willie tales out of school. I will never forget that. And when I die, I know my old friends Bob and Jimmy Sheehy will be keeping an eye out for me and my family. They are the best in the business. The Sheehys have been helping Irish families on the South Side for a long, long time, just like their father and grandfather before them. Sheehy, where all the right people go.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.ie.
Fox's is the best pizza in Chicago, and everybody knows that. For three generations, Fox's has been cooking up the most delicious za known to man. And if you want to have some, you got to go south to Orland Park, where Fox's started in 1973, over 55 years ago at 143rd Street and Ravinia Avenue. And also south to Mokina, where Fox's started in 2006, 187th Street, just west of Wolf Road. Go south to Fox's. And guess what? Both locations offer the greatest pizza in the history of the world, but also live music every Friday and Saturday at both Orland Park and Mokina at no extra charge. Go south to Fox's. Your mouth will thank you, and your ears and eyes will thank you too. You gotta love that Fox's pizza. Go south to Fox's in Orland Park and Mokina. Pick up or delivery. You can't beat Fox's pizza. So go south.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. One final joke before we go. Patty and Mary decided to try a 69. Patty's never won one before, so Mary says she'll show him. She tells him to lie on the floor and squat over him. As she lowers herself onto his face, she farts, apologizing. She tries it again, but farts again. Patty jumps up and says, "I'll be fucked if I'm going to be hanging around for 67 more of them." Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Hibernian Radio. We love you cops, firefighters, paramedics, and nurses. And if we didn't see you at the party, we're sorry we missed you. We will see you later. Bye.